Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This is episode number 236, Top 5 Rogue One Moments. And as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Galen Erso to my Orson Krennic, we have Carl Eclair.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, Carl.
That's a good comparison. I'm the genius, you just want to use it for evil. There's a difference between peace and terror. You've got to start somewhere.
You've got to start somewhere.
I butchered that line, but whatever. Man, Jason, it has been, what month is it, June? It has been over 6 months now since Rogue One has been out, and we have yet to do a top five moments from it.
Well, let's remedy that right now.
Let's do it.
Yes. I love this song. I love this movie. I love doing the podcast with Carl. I'd kiss your head if we were in the same room.
Oh man, I am excited to talk Rogue One. You know, again, this is such a darn good movie, and I just want to jump into it. And, you know, doing top five, this was the hardest I've ever had with doing like a top five moment list, because Rogue One, it has so many like drawn out scenes or sequences. So for the first time ever for me, I've got more like sequences. And I think for probably a lot of folks, right, like the best parts of Rogue One are really in Act Three, right? Like, there seems to be a general consensus that Rogue One is a little bit clunky at first and through the middle, but you know, that last act, right, the Scarif stuff, everybody just thinks is flawless because it is. And
right,
and I agree. Like, I think Rogue One starts great and it gets a little clunky, it gets a little slow, but then like once we leave Edu, like everything is just like, you know, awesomeness for the rest of the film.
Yes.
So, but that being said, I've got some great things to talk about. I know you do, too. But before all of that, we have another great Star Wars movie to just briefly discuss, where we asked everybody to share their favorite moments or favorite scene from Attack of the Clones, which I know is one of your favorite of the Star Wars films.
It's number two on my list. So we're talking about my second and third favorite movies tonight, which makes me very, very, very excited. Now we're just going to throw in Return of the Jedi, and we're all good. All right.
We can do that.
We can do that, right?
No problem.
Yep. All right. So we got as usual, as happens with these polls, we have a plethora of answers all across the board. So let's jump into this. In fifth place with one vote each, we had Padme's conversation with Queen Jamilla. We have Dex's Diner. Anakin and Padme love story, which I'm not sure is exactly a scene. the emergency powers scene, Mace versus Jango, Yoda and the younglings, the whole thing, which is also not a scene, but and then there's one more that I think you're very familiar with, Carl.
What one?
That would be the Tusken aftermath.
Oh,
the Lars garage.
Whoa,
scene?
Wait a minute. Are you telling me I'm the only one who picked that?
You're the only one in this poll who picked that.
Well, you know what, Jason? Makes me feel is like this.
They're dead.
Yeah.
Every single one of them.
Are the Larians?
They're dead to me.
And not just the men.
Just kidding.
Oh, boy.
But the women.
Oh.
And the children, too.
Oh, no.
Anakin, you're getting dark.
Yeah.
They're like animals. And I slaughtered them like animals.
Like cattle?
Like sheep? I hate them.
That's a bit harsh.
Oh, man. I absolutely love that scene. It's one of my... If I did a top five prequel scenes, it'd probably be in my top five prequel scenes. I love
that
scene.
It's a good scene.
It's so good. Now, granted, I have a mic, so I'm allowed to say more than the folks who are also in this category of one vote, but sorry to everyone else. Katie Horn did provide a really great explanation. I think she was the one who did the Queen Jamila conversation, right? Was that Katie?
Yes. Yeah, yes, because of the line that Queen Jamila says about
When we stop believing
in democracy is the day we lose it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I love the aftermath scene there. The Tusken camp is a great scene to begin with, but the aftermath, just seeing him struggle. And again, like, say what you will about Hayden Christensen, but again, there are certain moments where I think his acting is spot on. And I can't see anyone performing that scene better than him. The way he's shooken up like that. I mean, it's so like Macbethian, right? Like, can't get the damn blood off her hands. That's in Macbeth, right? Or is that Hamlet? I don't know.
No, I think that's Macbeth, I believe. Yes.
Okay. Right. So like Anakin looking at his hands, like, yes, it's definitely over dramatized, but that's Star Wars. It's supposed to be. It's a drama in a sense, right? It's this tragedy.
And well, particularly the prequels.
So it's just this wonderful scene of him, like, just like kind of lashing out in anger, but like he's breaking down too. I mean, he knows he went too far. And then obviously immediately after, like, I'm a Jedi. I know I'm better than this. You know,
it's also really the first insight into where Anakin could go, how dark Anakin can go, and where he can fall to.
Right.
You know, it's our first real insight into, you know, the mask that is awaiting him.
Yeah.
So, all right. But we got
other people who liked other things.
Yes. So let's go ahead and make sure we include all those.
Yes.
In fourth place with two votes each was the I hate sand scene. You know, it's coarse, it's rough.
It's irritating.
It gets everywhere.
I love that line.
It's fantastic.
I love it. And I don't know if the folks that voted for it were doing it just like as a joke, but I sincerely love that scene. And again, I hate when people are like, oh, this shows the lowness of the Star Wars prequels. To me, it's like, that's so, again, like, you've taken something so out of context, it's ridiculous. Right? If you take any random lines from certain movies, they're going to sound stupid as hell. But
right.
The scene makes so much sense. It's him confiding in Padme. Like, he's identifying that sand. I mean, he grew up as a slave on a sandy planet, and he hates it.
Yeah.
Like, it's a moment of vulnerability for Anakin. And to me, it's like, if you don't see that, like, you don't get the scene then.
Well, the thing is anyone who's lived in a desert identifies with that line? Anybody.
Oh, anybody that's been to the beach can identify with that line.
True.
But yes, true. Even more so. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, it's 100 and – oh, I don't want to tell you how hot it's been last weekend.
Oh, I've heard it's been awful there in Arizona.
Oh, it's been like a – they shut down the Phoenix airport because it was too hot.
Wow. Yeah, I think I heard that.
Over 120. If it gets to be over 120, they close down the runways because the planes, they have not tested at that temperature. So anyway – there's more. More with two votes each at fourth place. Also is the clone rescue from the arena where the clones and Yoda swoop in. Yeah. Look!
Okay. Around the survivors, a perimeter create.
Yes.
Oh,
one of the most gloriously awkward lines in all cinematic history. Also is the Battle of Geonosis, the one outside the arena. The credits, although I think some of those were tongue-in-cheek
jabs
votes
at
too.
Jabs at our beloved Sandy film.
Yes. In third place with three votes I titled this Begun the Clone Wars Has, but that's the final montage sequence starting with the clones, you know, militarizing on Coruscant and all that fun stuff. So great sequence. It really is one of the more powerful sequences in the entire film.
Mm-hmm.
In second place with five votes, I'll just make sure I didn't skip it on here. Nope, we're good. Second place with five votes, we have Yoda versus Dooku, which is a great scene. And everyone, and there was some people particularly mentioning the part where Yoda ignites his saber and even others are responding to how that was back in the theater. That's the biggest cheer I've ever heard in the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
That I've been to was when Yoda ignited his saber first time I saw Attack of the Clones. And then we had a tie. This is another one we have a tie for first place, Carl. Mm. What are we doing here? I don't understand this. With six votes each and tie for first place is The Rumble in the Rain and the Jedi Arena Battle.
Okay. It doesn't surprise me.
No.
The Rumble in the Rain is probably my favorite fight scene in the film. It's my favorite action scene. So I get why it's so high. The duels are a little, I mean, if you love Yoda, you're not underwhelmed. If you don't love Yoda, I think the duels in this movie are a little underwhelming. Like Obi-Wan, Dooku, it's okay. It's not very exciting. Anakin, Dooku, again, not very exciting. Yoda versus Dooku, again, if you like it, oh yeah, you love it. But I'm very indifferent about it at this point. Like, I don't love nor hate it. I loved it when it came out. I hated it at one point, and now I'm just kind of like, it is what it is. It's cool, but it's not great. It's not terribly exciting duel. So,
right.
To me, obviously, yeah. Clearly not to the Larians, which does not surprise me.
Yeah. But, Rumble in the Rain is great. But of course, my vote has just a little bit heavier weight than the Larians, which means that the Jedi Arena Battle is, of course, the best scene in all of the Attack of the Clones, which everyone knows. I love this scene so much. It is my absolute favorite scene in all of the prequels. It rivals Act 3 of Return of the Jedi for me. I hold the arena battle very high in terms of favorite Star Wars scenes, period. So it's just incredible to see all the Jedi in action, which is one of my favorites. And that's my thing with Star Wars. So, of course, it's going to be my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, that is a great shot when they all just come running right at the battle droids, lightsabers lit. That's a great scene for sure.
It is.
I mean, that is an iconically epic Star Wars scene.
Mm-hmm. It really is. It is one of the most iconic moments from Attack of the Clones and from the prequels in general.
Yeah, and think about it this too, right? Like, if the prequels, if George had made episodes 1, 2, 3, and then 4, 5, 6, that moment, while it would have been cool, it wouldn't have had the same impact if it weren't a prequel, right? Like, we see, like, very light introductions to Jedi in the OT, right? We essentially see Luke and Obi-Wan. That's really it. Yeah. And we get a sense of the legend of the Jedi, right? Luke carries that legend when he goes to Dagobah and is sorely disappointed at first when he meets Yoda.
Right.
So, like, for us to see that, again, like, after knowing what we thought they could be, like, that's like, yes. It's like vindication, right?
Well, right. I love the way that you put that because, you know, you're right. We get introduced to the legend of the Jedi. Then we see the sort of creation of a Jedi, but he's not a conventional Jedi. He's not a traditional Jedi. And we don't really know how he stacks up to the Jedi of old. Even though he is a full-fledged Jedi by the end of the OT, we're not really sure how he stacks up.
Right.
Of course, I think by the time we get to Last Jedi, we'll find that Luke has surpassed many of them, if not most of them.
I hope so.
But then, of course, we hit Phantom Menace and we go back and we get our first introduction to the Jedi of old. And we're like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
And then we get Attack of the Clones and you're like, you thought Phantom Menace was cool? Yeah. Here's all the Jedi.
Yeah. 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 It was great.
Oh.
Yeah.
I spent many, many an hour outside with a yellow wiffle ball bat pretending that I was fighting battle droids in that arena. And I won't tell you how old I was when I officially stopped doing that.
Jason, can you put that bat down, please?
Mm-hmm.
See what I did there, everyone? I implied he was doing it right now.
All right. And with that, let's move past my slight embarrassment of shame and move into Rogue One.
Jason and I were singing that song. I just want to, next time I try out for like America's Got Talent or The Voice, I'm just going to sing the Rogue One theme.
Yes.
So I'll be like, I will be singing Rogue One by Michael Giacchino. We're like, what? Isn't that an instrumental? Just hold on. All right, you can go, kid.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
But yeah, let's. I forgot to ask you before we started recording. Do you have any honorable mentions? I'm assuming.
Of course I do.
How many you got?
Two.
Me too. Okay.
So, I mean, I kind of cheated on one of them so that I – yes. But anyway.
Jason's like, my honorable mention cheated. Is all of the movie.
Right. I kind of cheated so that – anyway, I'll get to my cheat later. I managed to squeeze something else into one of my other ones so I could add something else to my honorable mentions. That's how much I love this movie. So that's shall fair. You go first or shall I?
I say don't care. Let's wait. Let's decide this for the next 5 minutes and waste everyone's time. Just kidding.
Sounds good.
I'll go first. Is that right with you?
No, that's fine. Go for it.
So my first honorable mention is Galen's message that he sends to Jin. Mm. And if I had made this list, and this is what's interesting too. Like, I remember when we did our Force Awakens top five moments. I think we did that within a couple weeks of the movie. This is 6 months out, and I think if I had done it 2 weeks out, it might have been a little bit different. I think I would have had a lot of the same stuff. They might just be in different orders. For instance, within a week or two of the film, this would have been much higher on my list.
Right.
So let me explain why and why it's not as high now. So the reason I love this moment is because, again, Rogue One to me, the success of Rogue One is the way it plays on your emotional heartstrings. At least it did for me.
Yes.
And this is the first scene that brought me to tears in the film. And the reason for that, and the reason that's not as high now, because it's not going to always bring tears to me when you've seen it 100 times, like eventually, like, you know, right, you get used to it. Same with right. Han's death scene. I can usually still make through it without crying anymore, but sometimes it depends what I'm going through. But Galen's message to me, the reason I love it so much is because essentially, yeah, I mean, yeah, he explains the Death Star, and we do learn that Galen's ultimately a hero here, right? Like, he's the one who put the flaw in it. But what I love about it is because, again, just the way he addresses Jin, he calls her my beloved twice. He calls her my Stardust, right? Like, that's his name for her. And he, you know, this is a young woman who's most of her adult life, all of her adult life, has probably wondered, like, where her father is and what he's doing. And, well, she might even know that he's working for the Empire and, you know, doesn't know where he stands about her. So here she is being told that she's still loved. He still sees her as his Stardust. And that line when he says, you know, I try to think of you in the moments when I'm strongest because otherwise, like, I can't go on. He essentially says, like, everything I've done means nothing compared to how much I love you. And mm-hmm. I love that. And I feel bad because I can't remember which Larian sent us. I think they sent us an email, and they put it so beautifully about how essentially, again, Star Wars is all about this train reaction of love that starts with Galen for Jin, right? He puts that in there because he doesn't want the Death Star to wipe out the universe. So he puts this flaw in there out of love for Jin. And then that love ignites right into Luke and into Vader, blah, blah, right? Like it starts this train reaction of love that redeems. And again, I apologize if you are listening right now and you're like, I sent that email. Remind me who you are so we can give you a shout out next episode because you put it so beautifully. But anyway, yeah. So I love that because it reminds Jin who she is. She's, you know, she's not just some aimless person who has to go around with her head down anymore. She has a purpose now. However, I think her purpose at that point, though, isn't necessarily save the rebellion. Her purpose is find my father.
Yes. No, you're completely right on that because, she has just had the conversation with Saw about how the cause has let her down. Mm-hmm. The cause is not enough for her.
Right.
And we still see that everything is motivated about her father up until she loses him on Edu.
Yeah.
And then the cause transfers from him to her. And that's when she fully buys into what he's been working for. And what she had been working for a while. But you're right. You know, this isn't about the cause right here. This is about daddy.
Yeah.
You know, it's completely about daddy.
It's to use the language of the film, which, again, I'm going to bring this up a few other times in some of my other moments. But it's the idea of her finding home again. Right. Her father is home. I mean, she knows her mother's gone. Like, there's no getting around that. Lyra is dead. Like, but her father is still home to her. So Right, she's walking around aimless because she's in a sense homeless. I mean, Saw was her parental unit for a while, but then he abandoned her in her mind, and so she's homeless. And now, not only has she heard Saw's reasoning, so she has some level of understanding what actually happened there. Now she also has her actual father indicating that he's alive and he's done something and he loves her. And right, like so, it it has her homeward bound. Rogue One, homeward bound for Jyn. You know,
right.
So yeah, I mean, so she leaves Jedha with the purpose of finding her father.
Yes.
And her purpose will change a little bit later, but I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. so what is your first honorable mention?
My first honorable mention, and you'll probably have this higher on your list, I think, is the prologue.
Oh, no, it's actually not on my list.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'm so glad I reworked my list to include this.
It almost made honorable mentions, but it was that or Galen's message, and I opted for Galen's message.
Well, I'm so glad I reworked my list and cheated so I can include this. but no, the prologue is so good. It sets these characters on this collision course, on this path, so well. And it sets the tone for the galaxy. The fact that Galen Erso, who is a brilliant scientist, who could, you know, literally probably be the head of the Imperial Scientific Corps if he wanted to, would rather live as a farmer on a planet where nobody knows his name in order to avoid the Empire and its aspirations and its plans. But the long arm of the law, so to speak, has found him.
Mm-hmm.
And in the guise of his old friend, and I use the friend with quotation marks because I'm not sure how much of a friend Krennic can actually be. He doesn't strike me as the lovey-dovey type. But it sets up the whole collision course that everything is set on, you know, for whatever it is, 15 years later, mm-hmm. whatever the rest of the movie is. And it's such a great prologue story-wise, but it's also, you know, some of the most gorgeous shots in the movie too.
Yeah.
I love the shots of the rings, from space and from the planet looking up and it over. Yeah. Oh, it's great. Sometimes I wish Earth had rings.
Me too.
but yeah, also I just had to bring this up. I never noticed this until I watched Rogue One today, but Lyra's blaster bolt goes through Krennic's shoulder. You see it come out the other side.
Oh, I've never noticed that either.
I only noticed it today. It's like, it's there for like, you know, three frames as it flies into the sky basically. But, you know, it goes through his shoulder. It doesn't stop there. I just thought there was just one thing I noticed. See, that's why I love these movies, is you find little things hidden throughout them that you never noticed before.
Yeah.
No matter how many times you watch them. So
yeah.
Anyway,
cool.
That's just one thing I wanted to point out.
I will be watching for that. In case anybody hadn't
seen it. Yes.
Cool. Yeah. No, I mean, I do love the prologue because it does. It just sets our story up so well. And, you know, a very different beginning of a Star Wars film for sure. Yeah, I mean, I love, like you said, the scenery like that we're getting. And Jason's waving his 6-inch chair around right now.
Uh-huh.
But at least he put his yellow bat down.
Shush.
I really like, you know, the moment is they're hustling and inside the little hovel there. And the first time you hear Jyn's theme is, you know, Jyn and Galen embrace, you know, Jyn, whatever I do it to protect you. So you understand. I understand. It's so cute. Like, it's just such a beautiful little tender moment that sets them, you know, it sets the, to me, it really sets the emotional tone of the film right there.
It does.
You've got this, you know, reluctant man who's about to be forced into something. And yeah, I mean, it's a great scene. And, you know, Krennic's doing what he thinks he's supposed to be doing and thinks he's doing is what is good, but he's not. So, and not to mention just the great, you know, like that great moment of, you know, like what a great design choice by Gareth Edwards to, like, he wanted to basically just do an inverse of Vader's entrance on the Tana 4, right? So now you've got the Death Troopers with the white clad main villain. Really cool design choice. And, you know, I love the moment with Lyra giving the Kyber crystal to to Jyn. and by the way, this is something my friend Greg and I were talking about. Well, Greg made the interesting point, which is 100% accurate, but like, how does she still have that when she's in prison? Like, they take everything from you, you would think, but she does, and especially a Kyber crystal, but whatever. Mm. A plot hole that we can easily overlook. But
yes,
I mean, I love when Lyra gives it to her and, you know, you know, it again, sets the tone of the film. Trust the Force. And again, I think I've said this before, but to me, Rogue One is one of the most spiritually rich Star Wars films, even though there's no Jedi.
It really is.
So it's more spiritually rich than episodes 2 and 3, I would say, easily combined.
Well, yeah, because, you know, that's the purpose, fall of the Order.
Right.
They're, it's the loss of that spirituality that really leads to the Jedi falling so dramatically.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So interesting that the people that are going to help save the galaxy are folks with faith. So very cool point by Rogue One. Mm-hmm. So
all right. What's your second honorable
mention?
I love how this was, they're actually honorable mentions. We're talking about them as if they're like actual full numbers here.
Yeah, whatever. Top 5 moments. From now on, we should start having top 7 moments. But then they're going to become top 9. At some point, though,
we might as well just have 3 honorable mentions, then make an even 10, and be done with it. Right?
Then it becomes 12. But something actually, so one thing I've wanted to do with you is actually go back and look at some of our top 5 episodes and do a top 10 through 6, right, with those, right? Because we're always like, I wish we could talk, right? It might be fun to go back and be like, you know, and look at what would be our 6 through 10.
Right.
So, but anyway, that's for a later date. My next honorable mention, which again, I'm assuming this might be on your list and probably higher, but it's Chirrut versus the Stormtroopers. For starters, I just love, like, as right, they're being arrested and let them pass in peace. Let them pass in peace. The Force is with me and I am with the Force. Okay. There's no way to do his accent without sounding a little racist, and I apologize, but for all is as the Force wills it.
All is as the Force wills it.
Is he's blind. Is he deaf? It's actually that's like witty for Stormtroopers. I liked that. But yeah.
If that's the extent of Stormtrooper wit, then it's pretty sad.
Right. And like the both this scene as well as when we first meet Chirrut, you know, when Jin bumps into him there. And, you know, you hear the first whispers of the Guardian of the Wills theme, which I'm going to play real quick. It just makes me think of Yoda's theme every time. Like, it's probably not even the same chords or anything, but there's just something about this tonality of it. This kind of, like, beautiful, like, magical sounding piece, right? And we only get, like, little glimpses of it at that, you know, really throughout the film. But when Chirrut steps in like that, like, it is. It's like, oh, here comes the spiritual figure. And it's really cool because, right, like, the Jedi in George Lucas's original conception were, in a way, offshoots of samurai warriors. And samurai warriors are, in a way, like monk-type warriors, right? There's a code of ethics. There's a code of being. But I'm even thinking of, like, you know, Buddhist monks in China who train in all sorts of martial arts, not for the sake of fighting and being violent, but just more so about like control of body and control of spirit. Chirrut embodies all of that stuff, right? All of those early conceptions of what a Jedi was. So it's great to see this like warrior monk who just steps into the, you know, to the arena and just kicks some butt. And it's very clear in that scene, right? Without having to, I mean, obviously we get Cassian asking as soon as the fight's over, is he a Jedi? But he's not.
There's no Jedi here. Only fools like this
dreamer. Only dreamers like this fool.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's very clear that Chirrut, yes, he's not a Jedi, but he is guided by the Force.
Oh, yes.
He is our mystical character of this film.
I think it's you who said this, at least first in my hearing.
If it's profound, I'm the first ever.
Is that Chirrut is, while he's not necessarily a force wielder, he's someone, he is a vessel for the Force.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's, I got that from you.
I think
you.
I said it, but I'm pretty sure I wasn't the first. But that's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, he is.
It's a great idea, though.
Yeah. I'm assuming you have that later?
I do. So right. I will save my thoughts on that scene.
All right. You want to go to your next honorable mention /6?
All right. My next honorable mention is going to be the Rebel Council.
Ah.
I love the council scene. I've always kind of enjoyed some of the sort of political scenes, obviously. It's whatever. But this one, it really shows how ill-equipped the rebellion is for what lies ahead at this point. And they need something like what's about to happen at Scarif to galvanize them and to bring them all together. And first of all, I like seeing all the other characters. I like seeing Admiral Raddus introduced there. He's also one of my favorite characters from the movie. But also Jin's impassioned speech there is wonderful as well.
More like, what choice do we have? Run, hide, scatter your forces. If you give into an evil this powerful, I don't know all of them.
I don't remember a lot of lines either. But yeah, but you're right. You know, and it's you're asking us
to invade an imperial installation based on nothing but hope. But
hope.
And then we get
science built on hope.
And then it. Yeah. Oops, I missed the swell. But yeah, did I miss the swell? No. Yeah, and then she's like, on nothing but hope. Rebellions are built on hope. And then you get,
there is no hope.
I listened to that soundtrack almost twice through today. I was on the public transportation a ton today. Watched the movie this morning and listened to the soundtrack essentially twice. What I was thinking, right, that piece is called Hope. It's the Hope Suite, which is the title track of Rogue One, right? Like, that's what we get on the title card as Rogue One appears, right? The blast of the hope. So really, Rogue One, right, what is the theme of this movie? Hope, right? Mm-hmm. It's a people of hope. This is a council of Jin is trying to inspire hope in a council.
Exactly.
So, sorry, I kind of inserted myself there. Sorry.
No, you're fine. And I also love how Jin is giving voice to what Mon Mothma and Bail Organa really want to say and really want to do, but they're in a position where they can't make those brash statements and those brash moves. You know, they have to cater and coddle the rest of the counselors here, which is why Raddus is such a refreshing.
Act now.
I say we fight.
I say the rebellion is finished.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I love it.
That's a great scene. And that was one, too, that just barely didn't make my cut because I love it. So Rogue One to me is a series of great speeches, too,
right,
which I will talk about later. But yeah, I mean, Jin's speech here is phenomenal. My favorite part, too, is when she's like, you know, the time to fight is now. And then Bodhi goes, yes. I love that. He like pumps me up every time. He's just, yes. You know, I'm so pumped.
I want to say that was probably not a scripted moment. Like they probably had a camera on him for the scene.
And he was just
reacting.
It. Right. Yeah. Wouldn't be surprised. Right. Like, who writes that in? And Bodhi says, yes.
Right.
I mean, sure, you could, but that's a great point. I wouldn't be surprised if it was ad-lib. Like, because that's the part that really gets me. Like, I feel her imploring you, like pleading with these people, right? Take action.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Bodhi is my voice. Yes. Like, right. Like, she's pumping you up.
Right.
But some people are still just too scared. Yeah. It's what a great scene. And I mean, the thing I respect about Mon Mothma and Bail, though, here too, though, is right. Like, while they are certainly on Jin's side and like they're not going to do it because, again, they respect the allegiance that the Alliance is. And,
right.
And Jin's welcome to go ahead and disobey that, which is great.
Yes.
But you have to respect. Because,
and you totally see that they completely approve of her disobedience when the communications guy runs out and to tell Mon Mothma what's going on. And, you know, Rogue One's left. There's fighting on Scarif, and Admiral Raddus's fleet is on its way. And you see Mon Mothma start to smile out of the corner of her eye. And you're like, she totally wanted this to happen to begin with.
Right.
So,
yeah. Great stuff.
All right.
So let's get into the top fives.
Yeah. What's your number five?
Number five. I can sense in the force a two-star review coming to us in iTunes because I'm, quote, doing it wrong. Man, we're still so bitter about that one thing from like 3 years ago. time for us to grow up.
Right?
But anyway, but my number five is the Darth Vader epilogue. And I've got plenty of reasons why it's not higher. It's great, but it's to me, it's an epilogue, right? Like, this movie has a prologue and an epilogue. When Cassian and Jin are essentially, you know, incinerated, and we get that beautiful moment of almost silence in the music where we see the mushroom cloud from space, and then the music picks up again as Vader and, you know, and his shuttle and the TIEs are flying towards, you know, Radish's ship. Here's the epilogue. Rogue One is fine without the Vader stuff.
It is.
And that being said, it's amazing, of course. And again, like we were talking about a little bit earlier with Attack of the Clones, right? Getting the, you know, Jedi in all their glory in a prequel movie is a vindication. Vader here, that's a vindication. To me, it's not just fan service. There is some fan service in it, though, right?
And I'm okay with that.
And I am too, as long as it's done well, and it is. So the first thing is just, again, when I first saw Rogue One, and if you listen to any of our episodes from back then, my first viewing and my second viewing were a 180. My first viewing, I was very underwhelmed with that movie. The only thing I loved was the Darth Vader scene. But then I did, you know, I watched it the next day, and I was like, okay, I was totally, this is almost better than almost all the Star Wars movies.
right.
That being said, like when I first saw that movie, it gave me chills, and it was like, I turned to my girlfriend sitting next to me at the time, and I just said, you know, oh my God, this is what I wanted. And that's exactly it. Like that was the one thing. And I remember when we did a bunch of the pre-shows and stuff, I said, we asked each other the questions, and we asked, you know, you guys, what is the one thing that you'd be disappointed if you didn't get to see? And this was my thing. I was like, if I don't see Vader with his lightsaber, I will be disappointed. So total moment of vindication. And then just the fact that the scene is just Vader being a monster.
It's terrifying.
It's terrifying. And it's amazing. 'Cause like, it just shows like, you know, we see Vader fight Luke, and he's, you know, an Empire. He's not really trying. He's fighting Obi-Wan. Neither of them are really trying. Return of the Jedi, it's just an emotional battle at that point, right? Like, we know Vader is to be, everybody's terrified of him. Yes, he's got a great control of the Force, but we also know he's a warrior. And this moment just shows what a monster he is, and he's such a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, I almost wish they almost had double the amount of guards there, because like that was almost too easy for him, right?
Too easy,
yeah. So but so that's
it's
my
a great scene.
That's my number five.
I'm gonna save my thoughts on it though.
Okay, what is your number five?
My number five is, well, Krennic's aspirations.
Great.
And this is when Krennic, of course, goes to Mustafar to have his conversation in Darth Vader's castle with Darth Vader. I love this scene. And I know the whole, you know, don't choke on your aspirations, director, line gets flack. And I'm like, excuse me? That's classic
apology
Vader.
Apology accepted, Captain Nita. Same thing. It's like the same type of humor.
It is. You know, Darth Vader has this morbid, dark humor.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's great. But it's a great scene because, you know, not only do we get the first introduction of Vader and that introduction of Vader when he walks into the chamber with his shadow just seeming to keep going farther and farther and farther up the wall, how much it dwarfs Krennic is so intimidating and cool. And then I love how Krennic I wanted to put something with Krennic and Tarkin in here, but felt like this was a more appropriate scene to talk about.
I know. I really wanted to throw in, we stand here amidst my achievement.
I know.
Yours. Yeah, I love that scene.
And I love the first one, too, where, you know, when has become now, directa. You know, that whole... I love
that. You like that because you can crush the voice.
Well, yes, I can do it better than the actor.
What's his name? Robert French. Way wrong. Guy Hurd. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
So, anyway.
I mean... I don't know why they didn't have Stephen Stanton do it. He was already, you know, doing a voice in the movie.
Although, anyway. To be fair, I think this guy is better than Steve Stanton's Tarkin, to be honest. That's my opinion. I love Steve Stanton, but I think this guy's Tarkin is better than Steve Stanton's. So
I don't know.
But anyway.
I haven't listened to them back to back. Anyway. I love this scene. And it's great because, you know, in addition to Vader completely cutting Krennic to ribbons. You know, Krennic has tried, you know, has worked so hard to get up here. And Vader's like, you think you're all that, don't you? Let me show you how completely you are not all that. And then he Krennic tries to salvage his reputation at the end. So does that mean I'm still in command?
You'll tell the Emperor about...
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Then he just... It's his whole goal to meet and impress the Emperor.
Right.
And Tarkin and now Vader stand in his way and forbid that, essentially.
Yeah. I'm glad you put this in here because, again, it was one very close to the top, but it just didn't make the cut. I love that scene as well because of so many of the things, all of the things you've said. But also, I love the set piece. You know, I know a lot of folks had issues with Vader's castles. I personally loved it.
It's gorgeous.
I can see why folks had an issue with it, but I personally just loved it. I love that it's Mustafar. And again, like the set piece, even where they're standing on, it evokes so much Star Wars-iness to me.
It does.
For starters, the background behind Krennic, it's very obvious that it's CGI. Not like it's bad CGI. It's obvious, though, that it's CGI. And it makes me think of Revenge of the Sith. Like, we're on Mustafar. It feels like an installation that we saw in Revenge of the Sith. So I like that it's rooted in the prequels. But then that, like, little black circle that they're walking around looks like the Carbonite Chamber to me. Like, it looks like the floor in the Carbonite Chamber in Cloud City. So... like, it just, everything about those set pieces, they did such a great job of making it feel Star Wars.
Yes.
But yeah, and you know, in light of what you were just saying, Jason, it actually makes me like Krennic even more in the sense of, like, he does have, like, he's got so much gall.
He does. I mean,
he's not afraid in front of all these other officers to yell at Tarkin, right? Like, amidst my achievement. He's not yelling at Vader, but he's not afraid to stand up to him. Most officers wouldn't do that in a million years. So at least, you know... Again, I really like Krennic. I know some folks don't think he's that great a character. I think he's great, and I think he's not a fun, powerful villain like Grievous or Maul or, you know, Dooku even, but he is, like, he's a gutsy dude to just stand there before Vader and you know, really he's really standing up for himself, right? He wants that audience with the Emperor.
This is what Admiral Piet would be like if he had a backbone.
Yeah. Piet does have one. I love Piet, but yeah, he's still no Krennic. Yeah,
no.
Krennic's, I mean, great here.
Krennic's ballsy.
Yeah.
I mean, he kind of has to be because he's the outsider,
right?
And you know, we learn that particularly in Catalyst, which I haven't read yet, but I am aware of that.
Catalyst really enhances Rogue One. Catalyst is not my favorite type of Star Wars book because it's not fun reading like Ahsoka or Lords of the Sith. But it's great information. I mean, you liked Plagueis, right?
I love Plagueis.
I think you'll really like Catalyst.
I have it on my shelf. I just need to read it. Krennic's the outsider.
Yeah.
And so he's got to prove himself and fight his way up to the top. And he's going to do that even with Vader. You know, he knows he's outmatched, but he's going to give it a fighting shot.
Right.
So sporting chance.
Yeah.
All right. Number four.
What's your number four? My number four is, it's kind of a sequence that essentially starts with Galen's death. I love this scene. Edu is, to me, is like, again, where the movie really picks up again. I think the movie's going pretty well right up till they're captured by Saw. Then some of that stuff really just, I don't know, it slows down a bit, even though, wait, Galen's message is in there, and that's one of my moments, but whatever. Anyway, but it's weird to say I love Galen's death scene, but I do. It's, again, it's just this beautiful, tender scene where, you know, I love that it's in the rain. And I think that adds to the darkness of the moment. And Jin is leaning down and she's found home. So she thinks, and she's losing it again, right? Like, I feel so much for Jin in this scene. Like, you know, and she really struggles to leave, right? Like, Cassian has to basically start to physically drag her away. And I totally get that, right? Like, you really thought you found what you were looking for, but like in the words of Bono of U2, but I still haven't found what I'm looking for. She's looking for Cassie and she doesn't know it yet. Hey girl. She thinks she's found, finally, like, I found my dad. Like, I can start to live again, because for her purpose, like we said, you know, up till now is to find Galen, and here he is dying. And again, my heart just breaks for her. And if you don't mind for a quick second, I'll give you a little scripture story that makes me think of the story in the Gospel of Luke, where the disciples are traveling to Emmaus after Jesus is crucified, and they think he's dead and gone. And he shows up in their midst and like says, "Oh, what are you all upset about?" And they're like, "Don't you know? We thought this guy, Jesus of Nazareth, was the one, but he's dead. We were wrong." Right. Like it's this moment of like, you really thought you found what you were like seeking and looking for, and it was taken from you. And that's what happens to Jin in the scene. And my heart just breaks for her, because I've been there. I've been there where you think you've like found the right person. And the only time I've still 100% been right, Jason, is you with this podcast.
Hey! Oh, that makes me feel so special inside.
Yes. Don't you die on me.
I'll try not to. Not planning to anytime
We're young.
Soon.
But, yeah, so like, so that's the thing I really love here. But then not only – so Jin is broken here. Cassian's dragging her away. You know, he says, you know, he's gone. Nothing you can do. Which, by the way, in my Blu-ray version, I don't know why, but that line is really quiet. It's hard to hear. But I heard it fine in the theaters, and it is still there. I love what he says, though. He says, he's gone, which is kind of cold, but then he says, there's nothing you could do. Right? So he's trying to at least say, like, don't feel guilty. Like, we got to go. But I think Jin also realizes, right, in this moment, like, she realizes that Galen was living for a bigger purpose. Her purpose is transformed here.
Yes.
Right? In light of death, she finds a new purpose that, like, all right, I lost him, but I still have something. I, you know, I saw your message. It has to be destroyed. We will. I know we will. Right. Like it's a Qui-Gon Obi-Wan moment, right? It's a dying promise here.
Yes.
You know, like she will. So yes, her purpose is now transformed to be even bigger, which, so I love that. And then what I also love is the rest of the sequence. So like, you know, Cassian taking out a couple troopers, but, you know, Chirrut taking out some, or not Chirrut, Baze taking out some troopers from long range.
Yeah.
Then, you know, Bodhi showing up, taking out some troopers. And then I love the shot and the music again. Hold on. I'm going to pull the music up because I love the music at this particular moment, the way it swells as they're leaving Edu. So here we go. Yeah. So it's like as they're running, you know, through the rain, Bodhi's shooting down these troopers. They're loading. And again, I love Bodhi's like, come on, let's go, let's go. Let's get out of here. You know, and here it is lifting up. The mouth is closing, right? And it's just like this. The team has been formed, right? Like, here are our heroes.
Forged in fire.
Yeah. And it's like this, how high this gets here. Love that.
I almost
piece.
Feel like we need to just play the soundtrack for the rest of the episode, you know?
I know. But it's so, I love that analogy or that term, Jason. You're right. Like, so out of this death, though, forged in fire is our crew who's going to save the day, right?
It's like, funny that you mentioned that because they immediately get into a squabble about what Cassian was doing there originally. Right.
But whether they like it or not, they're now bound to each other.
Right.
So that's my number four. I love that moment. I love that the scene itself, right up to them leaving as a team, and everybody's getting each other's back. Right, Cassian gets her back. Like he's no. Jin's on that platform. He goes to get her. He takes out some troopers. Baze takes out some troopers. Bodhi takes out some troopers. Right, everyone's getting someone's back here. They're forming.
Chirrut's taking out TIE fighters.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. to literally get that TIE fighter off an X-Wing back. Right.
Yep.
So everybody's got someone's back here. So again, this forged in fire.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my number four.
It's a great scene. It's a great moment. And it really is one of those touchstone moments for Jin.
Yeah.
Because you're right. This is when everything changes. This is when she stops looking inward and starts looking outward.
Yeah.
You know, and it's unfortunately it takes the death of her father to do that. But it's a crucial turning point for Jin and one that we're very glad that she took. So
yeah. Right. Well, she made the hard choice, right? Because she could have just been like, the heck with this, like go back, just hang her head and leave. But no, she comes back with a very deep conviction and purpose.
Right.
So, yeah, I love Jin. Jin's character is just phenomenal. So, and again, like she's obviously all of our characters in a way are fully developed in this film because they have to be. So,
yeah, right. Right.
But anyway, what is your number four?
My number four is Hope. The Hope sequence at the end.
With Leia.
Well, starting with Vader.
Oh, okay.
Which is starting. Okay. So we're going to start from
right,
the rebels getting the plans, racing through you know, the whole Vader sequence, but them escaping Vader, you know, and managing to peel out in the Rebel Blockade Runner, ending with Leia talking about hope. Mm. You're right, it is the epilogue to the movie.
Yeah.
But what a fantastic epilogue it is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. This is the literal glue piece that connects Rogue One to A New Hope. This is the bridge. This is the... Not only is it just a great scene and well shot and well done, but it is one of the most singularly important connectors in any Star Wars movie. The way that it bridges Rogue One to the original trilogy, directly into A New Hope in particular. And, you know, without this, people wouldn't be so amazed at how well this all goes together. Wouldn't be as amazed as they are. And it's still one of the most fantastic scenes. And I don't know if you saw, but about a week, last week, I think it was, I posted a video on our Facebook page of someone's reaction to this,
which has
scene.
Gone totally viral now.
Gosh, it was, it's still one of the most amazing reaction videos I've ever seen. That girl, she's just freaking out over it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And I thought I was, you know, the only one that was that amazed by this scene.
That's a good point.
I mean, I still remember sitting in the movie theater, and we've seen Tarkin much more than I thought we'd ever see him. We've got to see Vader, you know, first of all, choking out Krennic, and then, of course, in all his lightsaberly glory. And then we get one last little look into the legacy of Star Wars with these characters, with Leia. And, you know, the door opens, we see her standing there, and I'm like, oh. And then, you know, she turns to face Antilles, and the camera switches to her back again. And, like, that's all we're going to get. That's all we're going to get. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with us getting that. And then she takes the plans, turns right back and looks towards the camera and says, you know, what is it?
And what have they brought to us?
What have they brought to us? Hope.
Yeah. Which is what this movie's all about. Yeah.
It's so good.
It is so good.
So I don't have any deep philosophical reason as to why that's my number four. It just is, and because it's fantastic.
Yeah, what a great, you know, way of putting it. It is such a strong connector scene, and, you know, and to me, another great connector scene for me, that I loved in Rogue One is right after Rogue One leaves, right, and then we get Bail and Mon together, and you know, your friend, the Jedi. You know, and he says, like, everything about that, right? Like, he's been in hiding since the Emperor's Purge. I will send for him, right? To me, that actually connects Rogue One so well to the prequels.
Yes.
You know, just using the terminology, the Emperor's Purge, right? Like, you immediately just start thinking of Order 66. So, again, like, Rogue One does a great job of connecting both trilogies.
It does.
So excellently. So
it does. That's one reason why it's so high on my list of Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
All right, number three.
Top three. Well, great, because I cheated with number three, and I kind of slammed in two things.
What'd you get?
I call it Cassian speeches. Again, this movie's got great speeches.
Plural.
Yeah, sorry, I cheated. So the first one is his short one on the shuttle right after we leave Edu, right? And yeah, you know, I love, and again, apologies to everyone that we're not playing movie clips. I only have the movie on like the Amazon digital release, and my internet it doesn't like when I have too many programs running. So until I get it like into my iTunes or something, unfortunately we probably won't be using too many clips from Rogue One in the immediate future. So that's the apology. This is one where I feel like I wish I did, just because I love when he goes, I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old. Right. And like the way that neck vein, oh, it's so good. And like, I know this is going to sound kind of a weird thing to say, but it's a sexy scene. Like, he looks sexy. Not like I want to have sex with him, but like, there is something just like that raw energy that comes off of him is so attractive there to me. Like, I love that. Like, here he is being, you know, Jin is scolding him, and it's him basically saying, how dare you? You know nothing about where I'm coming from. And it's in a sense, the story still takes Jin's side when she says, like, you can't talk your way out of this. It's like, and I like that he says, I don't have to, because he doesn't, right? Like, yes, he admits, yeah, I went up there to kill him. But did I? No, I didn't. Right. And like, she's not wrong. Like, he put him at risk, blah, blah, blah. But I love like just the like the raw vulnerability we get. It's the most vulnerable moment of Cassian probably in his adult life.
Yeah.
And here he is doing it in a somewhat public scene where he's saying like, you're not the only one who lost everything. So again, like I really hope we get a Cassian novel someday, which I'm sure we will. I'd prefer something beyond young adults, please. not because I don't like think that stuff's garbage, but like, come on, give us something more. I still want a Chair and Bays thing that's more involved than Guardians of the Wills. But be that as it may. Yeah, I love
that
speech.
Finished Guardians of the Wills?
I didn't. Sorry. I got bored. not because it's a boring book, but it's just, yeah, I've got so many other things I'm reading right now. But anyway.
Yeah.
That first speech is great. So, right, like, he's really making himself vulnerable here. And, again, it finally get a sense of what Cassian, how long Cassian's been there. And, right, we have learned through, I don't know what sources, but they are canonical, that Cassian, right, he was fighting as a separatist when he was a kid during the Clone Wars.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember. It's in one of the visual guides or something. But, yeah, like, he was involved. His family was involved in the Clone Wars. They fought with the separatists. So he's always been wary of anything coming from the Republic / Empire. Mm. Yeah. If I am wrong, please, anybody out there, let us know, and I will correct myself next episode. But I'm almost positive I saw that somewhere, that his family fought for the separatists during the Clone Wars, which I think is really cool. But anyway,
well, Andor kind of does sound like a separatist name. So,
yeah, Cassie Andor, yeah, Onderon. Mm. Well, whatever. They weren't separatists, maybe. But anyway, yeah. So I love that speech where he's again he unpacks where he's coming from. I love that. And then the next one is the speech he gives right after Jyn's speech fails. And I love this when he's like, they were never going to believe you. And she does this like cute little curtsy almost, like, I appreciate the support. Watch her when she does it. She does like this really mini curtsy. It's really funny. Like, she's basically saying like, thanks for patronizing me, right? She thinks that's what he's essentially doing right here.
Yeah.
Like, they were never going to believe you. But then again, this speech here, what I love about it is Cassian is saying, like, he admits his sins. He admits, and like all of those guys behind him, like, we've all done some horrible stuff, but we did it with a greater purpose in mind, right? Like, if we don't pursue this, everything we've done is in vain. My life means nothing, right? Like, we need to do this. I need to do this. I don't care if I die. I need to do this. I think for some degree, at least for Cassian, this is where he'll find his redemption, right? Like, he needs to do this. This is salvific for him in a way. You know, he finds that he can make up for all the ills he's done in the pursuit of this ultimate good. So that's what it means to Cassian. And then my favorite part is the pinnacle is after he gives the speech and Jyn says, I'm not used to people sticking around when things go bad. Welcome home, right? She is finally home. And Cassian, of all people, is the one to welcome her, which I love.
Yeah.
Right. Look at their first interaction, the way he's leering at her from the side as she's being debriefed. And then he just kind of comes in. One was your last, right? Like, he like just comes in interrogating her. And now here he is, the compassionate one welcoming her home, and will lay down his life alongside her if he has to.
Yeah.
So I love it. And then of course it kicks right into Rogue One. So
with
their epic march.
Bum, ba-dum, bum. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
But yeah. That is my number three.
There you go. Yeah, no, they're great speeches, and you're right. The first one is definitely where we get our briefest glimpse into the history of Cassian, you know, and how much, you know, he has suffered. He's obviously moved to the point where he's largely, if not over it, but past it.
Yeah.
Although it still haunts him in his dreams, I'm sure, you know, late at night. But you're right, with the second speech that you're talking about, this is the hope for his redemption.
Yeah.
You know, he's done some bad things. He was about to kill Galen Erso, even though the facts were telling him he shouldn't. He killed his informant at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
He needs this.
Yeah.
He needs a righteous cause to go and fight for.
Right.
And
I think too, what it is for Cassian as well is, this is finally the purest of purposes, right? Like, when he joined the rebellion, it was to overthrow the Empire, which has obviously been a slow haul, to say the least. And he's had to do so many questionable things. But I think finally, here is a mission, right? Cassian is a mission-oriented person, which, again, like I remember saying a while back. But, again, listen to that, you know, that piece of music we often hear when Cassian is talking.
The mission.
Right, the mission music. That's always attached to Cassian. And you're, the last time you hear it is when they're landing on Scarif, and he's, you know, he's debriefing his troops as to what to do. You hear it there, too. Anyway, I think for Cassian, too, like, this moment, this is like that golden moment. He knows what he has to do, too, right? Like, couldn't be any more black and white. Cassian, Rogue One is all about living in the gray. Cassian's whole existence in the Rebellion is about living in the gray. Finally, it's black and white. You've got this mission. If you do it, you're going to do so much good. And it's, I think so. And I like when he says, you know, without that purpose, we're lost. Right. Like, and I think Cassian and probably like so many of his colleagues, right, they're like in this very muddy gray area where I think they could get lost in it. So finally, like this, the mission to Scarif, it's like a saving light. It's the Bethlehem star that he needs to follow. And it's going to lead him to the fulfillment of his purpose.
Yeah.
Whether he comes out of it alive, I don't think he cares. He just knows he has to do it.
Right.
So yeah, I love it. Love Cassian. what is your number three?
My number three. Let them pass in peace.
Oh,
This is where that lies. I love Jarrett so much. And this is, you know, obviously we met him earlier in the film, but this is really his true introduction. You know, we sort of glimpsed him. We got an idea, a peek at who he might be. This is when he fully comes down and says, yeah, no, I'm a guardian of the wills, and I'm much more than meets the eye. He's also a Transformer, by the way. No, just kidding.
Chirrut Imwe, more than meets the eye.
When Chirrut and Baze team up, they combine to create something even bigger and better. No, anyway.
they become a Megazord. Now that's Power Rangers. Oh, geez.
Now we're moving all over the place. But I love this scene because, you know, he starts off by really kind of embodying this old, you know, holy man type of idea. You know, he's like, let them pass in peace. He's going to come out.
Taps a stick. I love that.
Yeah, tap a stick. He's going to, you know, come out and try and mediate here. He's going to try and, you know, do the holy man thing. But he gets that, just gets him out in the middle there. And then he becomes the warrior monk and he just unleashes hell, essentially, on these stormtroopers. But he's having fun.
Or is he unleashing divine justice?
That's it. Exactly it. Is your foot okay? Oh, man. It's brutal, though.
Yeah.
It's brutal. You see, you know, the eyepieces splinter and fly out. Chunks of helmet come off. It's brutal.
Yeah.
And he's so efficient and he's so good. And Chirrut is, like I said, my favorite character in the whole movie. So obviously this scene is high on my list. So, and then, of course, the introduction of Baze there as his protector is great, too. Chirrut stands on his own as a character, but I love Baze with Chirrut as a team.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them as a team are so good. They work so well together, and I'll have something more to say about the two of them later as well. But I'm not going to say much more about the team because you've already talked about it somewhat. And there's not much more to this scene, me liking this scene, other than he's my favorite character. This is his introduction. It's incredible. It's awesome. It's so great. And so that's why I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think there's two scenes that really define Chirrut, and this is one of them. So mm-hmm. and it's good that it's an introduction one.
Yes.
You know, so yeah, it's great. I mean, obviously it's on my list, so I don't have anything else to add.
Number two,
I call it sending the message and Cassian and Jin's death. So, mm-hmm. There's a lot of death in this movie. Well, yeah, obviously. But right. God, so probably one of my favorite pieces of music ever is off of this soundtrack. Your father would be proud. beautiful, right? And remember when we went to David Collins doing the musical breakdown of Rogue One at Celebration?
Yes.
I loved how the perspective he gave us of, like, right, when this music starts, right, all these, like, chaotic things are happening, but this is, again, Giacchino being Giacchino, right? Like, this is not John Williams in this moment. And I'm very okay with that because I don't think John Williams could do it. It's John Williams. He can do anything. But I think Giacchino was the exactly correct conductor to get for these moments.
Yes.
And the thing I love about it, I mean, honestly, the main thing I love about it is the music. It's what drives this stuff. Mm-hmm. But essentially, they send the message, and then you have, you know, Cassian saying, you know, do you think anybody's listening? I do. Someone's out there, right? Like, is Jin's response. And she believes it. And, right, like, again, like, to me, it's a twofold response. It's, yes, the fleet's up there, the shield's down, they heard it. They've got it. But I think, again, like, for someone of a person who comes with a conviction of faith, to me, it's also like, yeah, the Force is listening. Like, there is something bigger that's responding to the amazing selflessness you've all just enacted. Right. So, like, you got that beautiful. And then they get into the elevator. And to me, it's one of the most perfectly, I don't know if it's meant to be romantic or not. I see it as romantic. I don't think it needs to be. I don't think Cassian and Jin need to be a romantic thing. But it is still so beautiful. Again, the lighting there, like the shadow over Jin's, over Cassian's face as Jin looks at him just with, like, with love. I don't know if it's romantic love or what, but it is love. And Cassian looks at her with that, like, just, again, his face, both of their faces are so broken and bruised at this point. And they just look at each other with tremendous love. Oh my God, this music's gonna make me cry. I better, like, stop. Oh man. But, and then, right, they go down to the beach, and as they're walking out to the beach, they both have, like, this smile on their face. It's not like a big, happy smile. To me, it's this smile that says, we did it. We're finished.
Right.
Like, we completed our purpose. Our mission is complete. You know, it's right out of the Gospel of John when Jesus dies on the cross, his last words, it is finished. Right. Like, and it's in a way like they're in control. Yes, they're about to die. You know, a lot of people are like, why didn't they go try to find a ship to escape? They did what they had to do. They found redemption. And at this point, literally their story is complete in the Star Wars canon, but also their character stories, they're complete. They did what they needed to do. And when they kneel down on the beach and they're watching this mushroom cloud approach them, right? It's just this beautiful surrender to we did what we had to do. And, like, this is the emotion of this film is, to me, unmatched in anything Star Wars so far. You know, and then when he says, you know, your father would be proud, like, and they hold hands and, like, they are experiencing this together. They did this together, right? This is a scene about coming together in love and conquering. And it's just absolutely beautiful. So, yeah, I've said enough.
It's so good.
I don't want to cry.
It's so good. But you're right, though. This is great. And I had a feeling you would talk about this, so this is not on my list.
You're like, let's see. Sappy as hell. Carl's got it.
Yep. But no, you're right. And I'm not going to go as far to – I don't think this is romantic love at all. However, if they had survived past this, it would have developed into romantic love between the two of them. I have no doubt of that.
Yeah.
When you go through fire like this together, there's an attraction forms. It's just a fact. But here, I think this is more, this is definitely, in my opinion, more, you know, family, more friendship, more,
sure,
we did it. This is, you know, we accomplished it. The cause can continue. You know, we, for once, everything came down to us and we came through.
Yeah.
It was down to them. They were the only two left who could do this. They did it. They sacrificed themselves and died in the process, but they did it. They were the most important people to the rebellion at that point. And if they had not managed to complete their mission, complete the task, get the plans, all of this would have been for naught, and nothing would have moved past this point. the rebellion would have been crushed and young Skywalker would be one of us.
There you go. You got Return of the Jedi in.
There's Return of the Jedi. So, you know, but you're, this is such a great, and you're right. This is sort of the moment where they can breathe.
Yeah.
Accept the consequences that are going to happen here. Accept that this is the end here for them. But they can actually breathe. They're free.
Yeah.
Now. So
the freedom of redemption, right? Uh-huh. So real quick, I just wanna here's how the music kind of ends. To me, this is how the music of Rogue One ends here, and then we get the epilogue piece, but it's right here. This big bombastic. There it goes. Right. They're engulfed. And then silence. And then, right, these strings just mourning the loss, right? So beautiful. I literally stole those words, I think, from David Collins. He does talk about how the strings are mourning. but then here we go. Like, we've got a new, and then the music picks up as the epilogue starts. I remember the first time I watched it when I came out for home video. I was bawling as the movie ended. I when I finished watching this morning, I was bawling super hard. And I remember the first time I watched it at home, I just immediately said out loud to no one, because I was by myself, thank God. But I just said, I want to find something that's worth dying for, right? Like, I know that sounds a little bit morbid, but to me, the message of this movie in a way that's so beautiful is find something that is worth giving everything to. Right. Like, find something in life that gives you so much purpose that you would die to live for it. Right. Like, it, to me, that is kind of the message in a way of Christianity too. Like, what it means to live an authentically Christian life is to love so much that you give everything. And that's what we see Jin and Cassian doing here. Like, they're giving everything. And I think that's, it just jumps right out of the screen and hits me in the heart every time. And it just says, make sure you have something that you are so in love with, whether it's a person, a purpose, a goal, that you're giving everything to, that you will bleed for it. And I just, that's why Rogue One is just such a beautiful movie to me.
Yeah.
Man, it's like my number one. Good God. You guys are like, Jesus, Carl, start crying already and be done with it.
Well, you're not going to cry for my number two here.
I have a feeling I won't.
My number two, and this is where I cheated, is the space battle over Scarif. Now, I cheated because there's two particular moments in this space battle that I had on my list, and I decided, what the heck, and I combined them into one. And those moments are when the Rebel fleet arrives, and, you know, we get Admiral Raddus, you know, declaring the arrival of the fleet, and Rogue, or a Red Leader and Gold Leader showing up. Oh, biggest pop in the audience. You know, when that happened, everyone cheered when Red Leader and Gold Leader showed up on screen. It was great. It's still so cool to see the two of them back, and, you know, get them leading these, you know, helping to lead these squadrons in this decisive battle over Scarif. And then the second part of that in particular that I wanted to highlight was what I'm calling the Hammerhead Gambit. Where
Raddus
goes, awesome. I have an idea.
Call up a Hammerhead Corvette.
I have an idea. Yes, he's so great. I love Raddus so much. And not only is it just a cool sequence to see that Hammerhead be used like that, but it's also, you know, another one of these instances where these, you know, in movie terms, these nobodies are willing to die to provide this hope, to get these plans off this planet in order to save the galaxy. You know, it's such a cool sequence. It's an awesome looking sequence. It's epic. It's action packed. It's really amazing. And of course, the music sort of really cuts out as the Star Destroyers drift down into the shield gate. Which then, of course, allows Jin to send the message through after they've knocked Krennic out for the count, before things start picking back up again. But it's so good. It's just a really great sequence, and I love it. So
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm glad it's not on my list. I love the space battle for sure. Yeah, I like that you did kind of pick a couple of individual moments. I remember my friend Greg said, he's like, the first viewing, you know, he was like, I literally pumped my fist when, you know, the X-Wing comes out of hyperspace. They're all forming up, and then this is Admiral Raddus of the Rebel Alliance, right? He's like, oh, I pumped my fist. It is. It's such a great pump-up scene.
It is.
And yeah, I love the hammerhead trick. That's I love Raddus. I think I like Raddus more than Ackbar, and I love Ackbar. But oh, I think Raddus
it's so hard.
The
they're both so cool, so good.
Yes.
And Ackbar's got obviously much more length and time here in our universe, but Raddus rocketed right up there with him.
Right. This space battle is absolutely awesome for sure. I mean, I love that the ghost is out there flying around kicking butt. Very curious as to what the fate of that's going to be. We can assume it wasn't destroyed there, but I don't know.
We know at least Hera survives because
Hera's there. And Chopper.
Yep, and Chopper. You know, they've got the Forces of Destiny shorts that are supposed to be coming out this summer.
Okay.
There's a synopsis for one where Hera is on Endor. I think this is probably like during the mopping up after Return of the Jedi, where she's on Endor and there's like little something that happens with her, Leia, Han, and some Ewoks. I don't know exactly what it is. But yeah, so she's supposed to be around.
Well, we're going to need a special edition of Return of the Jedi and just CGI in the ghost.
You know,
unless it gets destroyed in between, right? Like, which it could. She could just be there in something else, like an A-Wing.
And you know Dave Filoni is this close to making the bearded guy on Endor officially Captain Rex.
Yeah.
You know, he's that close to making that retcon a reality.
Right. yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That being said. I love the space battle. You know, it's great seeing the ghost there. A good space battle is always a plus in my book when it comes to Star Wars.
Absolutely.
And this was a good space battle.
Yeah, it was. One of the things that, so you pointed out earlier how, what was the thing you pointed out? Oh, how the blaster bolt goes through Krennic at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
And this is not nearly as intricate because I'm sure everyone noticed this, but I still love it. It's a great visual as the Star Destroyer does start crashing down through the shield gate. And then you can see all the like rubble from the shield gate rippling off the shield. It's a really cool shot. Like you see the shield kind of light up. I don't know. I just think it's such a cool visual thing to see. So,
yeah. It's it just ripples across like that. It's really cool. So, all right.
Are we finally to number ones?
Yes.
I think we made it there, didn't we?
I think we did. What's your number one? I wonder if we have the same number one. I doubt it, but...
Here's my number one.
We do!
I'm not surprised. So I call it the Master Switch / Chasm Shootout.
Yes.
So yeah, as much as I've loved everything before it, this is... It's leading up to all the things that I really loved before, but... this is pure Star Wars action. I mean, this was one of those scenes that I wanted to get up and like pretend I had a blaster and play in the theater. you know, and again, I'm stealing this from what David Collins said at the panel we went to at Celebration. But when he's talking about this particular piece of music, right? Like we all know, right? If you've listened to Star Wars Oxygen, you know that this is this piece of music right here. It's, you know, what is it called?
The Dies Irae.
Dies Irae, right? And it's a piece from an old Latin mass that is about Judgment Day, essentially. So the closing in of Judgment Day or in here, right? I love that the piece starts literally as the Death Troopers are hopping off the shuttle. And Dave Collins said they are literally being pursued by death now.
Yes.
Which is just so great. Like, it really raises the stakes for what's going on here. And I love it from the beginning right up to essentially like Chirrut making the decision to go out there, which I know you're going to probably want to focus on. So I'll let that happen. But I actually really love it. Just as they start hopping down, they're shooting at them and the guys are running right towards the bunker there. They're getting shot in the back. And one of my favorite characters in the film, who's like an unsung character, but is Melshi.
Melshi. Yeah.
I really want a Melshi action figure. Really? Did they make one? I don't think they do. I know I have Pow. But I don't think they've made Melshi. Don't know if they ever will at this point, but I love his figure. And I love that, like, a guy gets shot in front of him and he does drop to try to help him. Again, just show, like, a little thing like that. Like, it just shows you what kind of guy he is. And then he gets shot too, right? Not killed, but he gets shot too. And he, you know, stumbles forward. And at that point in the film, like, every time I watch it, I am on the edge of my seat. Cause it's just like, oh my God, these guys are giving everything and they're losing, right? Yeah. Like, it's, you really feel for them. And then you do get Jin and Cassian, like, climbing up, and they do get the plans, right? And you get the swell of the hope theme, which, so here, let me just pull that up. Oh, whoops, right there. Hold on. Here we go. So she reaches up and grabs it, and we get the hope theme. Yay, they got it.
I got it.
Got it.
Careful.
Got it. So, right, there's a triumph in the midst of all of this.
And then Krennic
comes in, and he's, you know, Jin. I just love that shootout. Like, it's like a fun action Western film right there.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that Cassian takes out the two death troopers. And I'd like to say, it's not that Krennic necessarily gets the better of him. Cassian's looking out for Jin. He's looking up at her, telling her to keep going. And that's when he gets shot off his mark. You've got this relentless pursuit of death. Our heroes are giving everything they can. Like, you just, oh my God, like, right? Like, just imagine that you're giving everything you can and you're just, like, getting knocked back and knocked back, but they don't stop, right? Like, they just keep trying, you know, like, and Melchik is like, you know, it's out by that console, and that one trooper, he's like, I got it. And he immediately gets shot and killed.
Right. And then the next time you cut back to them, you see Melchi is dead. So he's obviously trying.
Yeah.
So,
So it's just like, my God, they're giving everything. And then you've just got that beautiful, I love that shot, that beautiful shot of Chirrut grabbing his staff right up by where that essentially a kyber crystal is. And it's almost like he's got this because he's got faith. And it's not that they couldn't, but he's going to do this. And he literally throws himself into an ocean of faith in the Force here and just goes forth. And to me, that's kind of where, for me, that's where I'll stop myself talking. But
And I'll pick it up from here.
Yeah. Go ahead. Ride it out.
Oh, man. And I like this sequence. I call it the Master Sword sequence as well, because this is where all the sacrifices start happening.
Yeah.
Right before this piece of music starts is when K2
makes his
sacrifice.
I like that he goes first, because for me, like, I like K2, but, like, he's not even a person, right? Like, he's just a droid. Not to diminish that, but makes sense that he goes first.
Yes. So right before this piece of music starts, he makes the sacrifice. Then we get this buildup as things are finally starting to fall into place. Bodhi's got the hookup. He just needs the juice, basically. Right. And that's what this is all about. And so while Jin and Cassian are making their way up, they've got the plans. It's down to the other folks to make sure that the door is open so that when they transmit the plans, it gets out. And we're down to Chirrut and Baze. And Chirrut, you know, has this look on his face. It's a slight look of resignation, but also an expression of complete determination and faith that it's down to him, essentially.
Yeah.
And he knows it. And he is going to put all of his faith in the Force in order to make this happen. And he does. He trusts the Force. He walks out there, and it's amazing. It is one of the most spine-tingling scenes in the movie for me. I get chills every time. I've got chills just thinking about it. He gets out there. He turns the switch. And then by the time we cut back to them,
and don't forget to mention that smile.
That's what I'm getting to.
Oh, sorry.
I'm getting to.
Oh, yeah.
We cut back to them, you know. Bodhi's all excited because they got it. He's now trying to transmit out. But we cut back to Chirrut and Baze. Baze is trying to get Chirrut back because he knows this can't end well. And all Chirrut does is he turns around. And the only word I can come up with is he gives this beatific smile. Is that the pronunciation? Is that correct?
Beatific, yeah.
Beatific smile?
Yeah.
That's the most accurate description I can come up with for what that is.
I like it.
You know, he's on a stained glass window at that point, you know, the halo and everything behind
saint
him. You know,
patron saint of faith.
Yeah, right. patron saint of master switches.
Yes.
oh, man. But, you know, the guardian of the wills. And then, of course, he goes. And it's so heartrending for me because.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'm the only one who really feels this way, but I feel like his death out of everyone else's besides maybe Jin and Cassian hurts the most.
Oh, totally agree.
So
here's the music for when he decides to go out there. Right. Oh God. I can't say enough about Giacchino. Oh wait, is this where he is? Oh no, this is where Cassian gets shot down, but here we go. I want to get... Yeah. It's where he gets shot down. Yeah. Chirrut! Come! Goes flying. Chirrut! And then all of a sudden the Death Troopers can't shoot worth a damn, but which is fine.
and then when Chirrut goes out...
This music here is great, too. And I love when he says, look for divorce. You will always find me.
Chirrut goes out.
Yeah.
And in so inspires his friend.
Yeah.
To rediscover his faith.
Yeah.
And when Baze goes out in his blaze of glory, it's a culmination of not only Baze, you know, returning to his roots, returning to his faith in a way that's amazing, but it's also really highlights the influence and the determination and the complete belief that Chirrut has, not only in the Force, but in his friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's amazing. And I love it. And everything about this scene is just so incredible. It's so epic and it's so sad all at the same time.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt in my mind that this is my favorite scene, my favorite sequence in the entire movie.
Yeah. I love, Chirrut's last words are words of faith. You know,
yeah.
look for the Force and you'll always find me.
Yeah.
Right? Like he knows he's about to become part of whatever that is.
Yes.
And don't worry, my friend. You can always find me. I think he also knows Chirrut's, or Baze is probably also going to die, but, right, like, Chirrut's whole life has been a testament to his faith. And he dies doing something wonderful because of his faith. And again, just real quick, I mean, not to beat this over the head and try to pretend to be the amazing David Collins, but listen to these strings just weep here as Chirrut dies, right? Like, here they come in. Right? Like, they're totally weeping what's just happened. Again, absolutely beautiful work by Giacchino.
Turn it off, turn it off.
I love the faith that Chirrut always has. And
yeah.
He knows, like, again, like, I love that you, right, like, he does. He has a beatific smile. And even Baze almost mirrors that when he looks back at Chirrut. Is he's about to die.
He almost gets that look when it cuts back to him and he is looking forward towards the Death Troopers before he makes his walk out there. He's got that look of determination, and then you're right. When he looks back at Baze, it's like, it's time to join my friend.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
They've accepted their lot in this.
If you unpack everyone's death, the only one that So, for instance, real quick, this is get off topic just for a second, right? Chin and Cassian, they both die to make sure the plans get sent.
Yeah.
Bodhi dies right as he's able to make the connection with the fleet, right? Mm-hmm. Very clear what he died for. K2 dies defending that door so that Jin and Cassian can get the plans. Very clear what his purpose is. Chirrut dies to switch the thing so that they can send the plans. Very clear purpose. What is Chirrut's, or sorry, Baze's, right? And I'm not saying that he doesn't, but right, his isn't as clear, right? Like his, is he just going for revenge at this point? Is he, right? Like what do you think is Baze's?
This isn't about revenge anymore. Now, if this was when they were still on Jedha, absolutely.
Yeah.
This would have been about revenge. But this isn't about revenge anymore because as he's going out there, he's, I'm one with the Force and the Force is with me. You know, he's saying the mantra. He's back in belief. This is his destiny now. And I think at this point, all he's doing is fulfilling destiny. You know, the Chirrut and Baze have been a team their whole life, it seems, or at least a very large part of their lives. This is where they make their stand. This is where they make their end. None of them are getting off this planet anyways.
Yeah.
And so he's going to go out the best way possible in the way that is most in line with his rediscovered belief. Mm. And he's going to go out centered. He's going to go out in a way that would make his friend proud.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So
yeah.
This isn't about revenge anymore. Right. This is about fulfilling the mission, fulfilling the purpose, and really solidifying his rediscovery of faith.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he dies with a testament of faith too, right? His dying words are, I'm one with the Force and the Force is with me.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And even if you think about it, he takes out the rest of the Death Troopers. So he does. He embodies. Now, he's taken up the mantra of Force belief, mm-hmm. and he's eradicated death, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he goes out too, but like he eradicates death with that mm-hmm. mantra. So I guess that could be it. But anyway.
So, his is the most personal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. His is the least utilitarian. Everybody else is utilitarian. I mean, it's for a reason for sure, but it's a utilitarian thing. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Cool. So there you go. Dry your eyes, everyone. This has been an emotional ending because that's what Rogue One is. Rogue One just pulls those heartstrings, in my opinion. It's such an emotional film. Again, in a way that other Star Wars movies just aren't. You know, I mean, I was very emotional during a lot of Force Awakens, mainly just because, like, I was so excited to see Star Wars back on the big screen. And, of course, Han's death, like, butchered me. But, right, like, no other Star Wars movie has ever moved me the way Rogue One has. And that gives me hope that Star Wars obviously still has great tales to tell us, right? Never forget. I think it's always important to whatever Disney continues to put out there, whether it's an anthology or a saga film, is to remember that the main purpose George Lucas gave us Star Wars, that he thought our world needed Star Wars, was because it needed fairy tales. It needed a mythology that inspired goodness in people, right? And mm-hmm. it taught them to look outside of themselves, look to something bigger, whether it's a religious identity or not, but find something bigger and, you know, and live that out. And I think the Star Wars films give us that, and Rogue One gives us that in spades.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
So,
anyway. It's good.
It's a great film. I love Rogue One. I kind of want to go watch it right now. I wish it weren't so late.
I know, right?
But anyway.
We went a long time with this top five.
Yeah. Well, top seven. Okay.
Right. All right. Well, we should start wrapping this up. Carl, you had a great team-up matchup for our next episode. What are we doing here?
Oh, yeah. So I wanted to... I've been thinking a lot about I don't want to get into the long explanation because we've been going for so long. I just thought because they're two of my favorite Star Wars characters and they'd be a great team. Han Solo and Cassian Andor. So that's team one. Han and Cassian versus the Fetts. So Boba and Jango. Who would win? Han and Cassian, two of the most gifted gunslingers and, you know, scoundrelly type, you know, undercover badasses against two of the most incriminating bounty hunters to have ever lived.
Right.
So who do you think would win in that showdown?
Ooh, I like it. I've got my own thoughts, but I'm going to save those for next episode. And Carl.
Yeah.
If people want to weigh in on our topic, on our matchup, or anything else, where can they do that?
Well, they can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/WampusLairPodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WampusLair. Shoot us an email at WampusLairPodcast@gmail.com.
You had to start playing this, didn't you?
Yeah. Gotta have an emotional ending. It's been a ride, my friend.
That it has. All right. Anything else before we wrap this up?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 236, top five Rogue One moments. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.